How do you go about deciding what a risk analysis is?
Well, for me, I mean, I do these every single day. And it typically begins with me deciding whether or not to say what comes to my head to my wife.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just simply looking over and going, shouldn't say cheery good morning to that face.
So, you know, the gap between your brain and your tongue is called a risk analysis.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax, HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin. Good afternoon, Donna.
Good afternoon, David.
We spent an extended period of time with each other today.
I know. We have so many projects and so many things and so much content we're creating that we got to get this done because I'm sick of you.
Yep. So just got finished recording one of many modules within the Cardin Club and HIPAA for MSPs. So cranking out more content, more videos, more training. So good stuff. And speaking of more training, how about the Privacy and Security Bootcamp? The Pri-State Bootcamp, 3.5-day in-person event, September 12th through the 15th. You can find out more at PriSecBootcamp.com, but we are going to be doing things like an entire day of supply chain risk management and, you know, looking at that from both directions because it's a bi-directional problem. We're going to have a whole entire day of you got to prove it, looking at documentation, training programs, policies, and procedures. Another day of risky business, identifying and managing all the risks that are involved in your organization. And then, of course, it wouldn't be complete without a Murphy's Law day, of course, because there will be something that goes wrong, and you better plan for it while things are going right. So all that is going to be rolled into a 3.5-day in-person event. And as a matter of fact, Donna's even doing a Bourbon and Breeches event.
That's right. So, Bourbon and Breeches happy hour. You're going to still learn, but it will at least try to make it fun. And all the instructors that we're bringing in, it's not just us anymore. We've got a whole group of instructors that have a variety of experience and information to share. Mm-hmm. And we are real excited that on Murphy's Law Day, we're even doing desktop exercises and reviews. And leading that is a dude, we'll just say. but you can get the information on the website, Michael Lanham. He's, you know, a PhD. He's just a loser kind of guy. He just, his last job, he was the CISO for the U.S. Military Academy. So you might want to learn from that guy.
And show off.
Yeah. So, you know. A military guy who is nerd factor of high, who is doing the dumpster fire, how we deal with it scenarios. So we're real excited to have him. And we've got groups in that our other instructors, it's going to be great because they're bringing their experience to the table to talk about their things instead of us going, well, you know, so-and-so tells us that this happens.
Yeah,
they're actually going to be there for you to talk to and learn from them as well. So,
yeah,
it's a big group.
Going to have folks from Black Talent Security, Comply Assistant, Sphere, Security Metrics. There's some other people that are coming that I don't know that I can disclose, so I won't say. But we do
have an investigator from the Office for Civil Rights that will be there to answer questions about how investigations work. Of course, you cannot hold them to anything, but she's done this with us for other boot camps. Great to work with. So we've got quite an agenda with a great group of people. Sign up now. I think when this one comes out, I think we're having to extend early bird a couple of weeks just because of budgeting constraints. we don't think about budgets ending at the end of June. We're small businesses. So people need a little more time, they say. I think we're going to extend it. But check it all out. It's going to be great. Don't want to miss it.
That is right. And again, you can find all that at PriceSecBootcamp.com. But first, before we get into the show, I do want to thank our donors and our sponsors and people who support us. We appreciate it. And make sure you check out our podcast webpage. If you haven't been there in a while, helpmewithhippa.com. Lots of great stuff there and show notes and all that good stuff. All right, Donna, you ready? You ready to get into the HIPAA say what?
I don't know. Maybe you stop using the button. Now you just do it yourself. There you go.
Yeah. That's kind of hard to do.
You did well. Let's see. We'll see. We may just have you keep recording it until you get it right.
So this is a question from a listener, and they want to know, how does HIPAA apply with deceased patients?
Yeah, that does get kind of tricky. And the good news is, on the HHS.gov website, they do have a lot of information, but let me just, here we'll net it out. The first part that you have to know is that the privacy rule applies to PHI of a decedent, a patient who has passed away, for 50 years following the date of death of the individual. Now, it doesn't say that you have to maintain the documentation. It says that if you have it, you must keep it private. Okay. Remember, there's other rules about how long you have to keep medical records. That this is saying I must protect the information for 50 years. Now, of course, as with anything with HIPAA, it's more complicated than that because we have to take into consideration, and in fact, they make a point of saying that it's included in the law that it makes attempts to balance the privacy interests of surviving relatives and those in a close relationship with them to the need for archivists, biographers, historians, and others to access old or ancient records on deceased individuals for historical purposes.
That would be what your records fall under.
Yes,
ancient records.
There you go. Can't wait till I tell my dad you said that, because you know he's gonna love how much older he is. He always tells me he's the same age as me, and I'm like, yeah, I know. We grew up together, but the point being in those statements is the personal representative parts of the law kick in. So once the patient is deceased, then all of the things that would apply if a patient is incapacitated, any of those things that apply to define who a personal representative is, which is a whole nother rabbit hole. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going down that one. Because there is the definition of who is considered a personal representative. That is very important. But if you make sure that you go and take into account the normal decisions about personal representatives, then those people are allowed to make decisions through that 50-year period. They can authorize or deny throughout that whole time.
Wow. All right. So we will have some links to some more resources about that answer. Yeah, on our webpage in the show notes. So go check that out.
Yeah, there's some FAQs, and then there's a link to determining who is a personal representative. So for 50 years, you can't get a hold of my information, David. We'll tell all my personal representatives, don't let him know just how bad it was.
Yeah. Too bad we can't protect everything just 50 years after we die.
I know, right?
All right. That brings us to our next topic, which is the 405D tip of the week.
Yes. So we made it through our 10 practices. And, you know, there's constantly information being distributed. And it's not spammy stuff. It's, hey, look, these new posters came out, or we have these new videos, or there's this new webinar that we're doing. Here's a newsletter to help you tell you about things that are going on in healthcare cybersecurity. So the way that you stay up to date on all things 405D, besides listening to us, is go to the website and subscribe to the mailing list.
Mm-hmm.
So go to 405d.hhs.gov/subscribe, or you can go to the main page. There's a subscribe button there, and that will then get you on the mailing list so that as new things are released and new resources are available, you can take advantage of them, be aware of them, share them with your staff. There's infographics. There's some great things. And it makes it so much easier. It just arrives in your mailbox, and then you can just push it out. So
do what you want to with it. All righty. That brings us into our topic for today, vendor transition tips.
Yeah, when you do, and you, particularly anything that has to do with IT, but it's not just IT, and we'll hit on an example of that in a minute. But if I'm changing internet service provider, mm-hmm. or I'm changing MSPs, that's huge. If I'm going mm-hmm. from none to one, a little different, but if I'm going from one to another, that is where things go horribly awry if you're not careful.
Yeah, maybe even your janitorial service.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things where you should take some time to evaluate, how's it working right now? What do I have in place right now? And what is my new service going to provide? Is it apples to apples? Very rarely is it. Often I'm adding things or getting new things that are replacing things. Sometimes I'm dropping services. Whatever that is, account for them. You know, failing to plan is planning to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So we call these mini SRAs to try to alleviate the panic when we say you need to do a risk analysis. We need you to do these risk analysis like your daily risk analysis. And David has his regular, always there example of his daily risk analysis. And these are very similar to that. It just is when it's the size of the problem and how is that the easiest to decide, David? How do you go about deciding what a risk analysis is?
Well, for me, I mean, I do these every single day, and it typically begins with me deciding whether or not to say what comes to my head to my wife.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just simply looking over and going, probably yeah. shouldn't say cheery good morning to that face. Yeah.
So, you know, the gap between your brain and your tongue is called a risk analysis.
That's a good one. I like that one. So that is our new definition of what is a risk analysis. The gap yep. between your brain and your tongue. But we do these on a regular basis in our day-to-day stuff, and when something big is happening. So I want you to think about this is kind of like, oh, we're having a dinner party. We need to make a plan. You know, mm-hmm. we're going on vacation. We need to make a plan. This is outside your normal day-to-day. You don't just all of a sudden go, well, my dad did that. He would just show up and say, pack something. We're going on vacation.
Yeah.
Want to give us a hint where we're going?
Yeah. How can we pack properly if we don't have a clue where they're going?
Exactly. And when we're looking at all of the things that can go wrong today that we say you have to have a plan for, we don't want you to use the plan just because you made it go wrong. Right? So yeah. These are the kind of things that we're talking about, making a plan, having a checklist, having an analysis of what could go wrong, how can I make sure it doesn't go wrong, what's changing, and how can I make sure that nothing gets lost in the transition. That's really what we're looking to do. So major upgrades of equipment or applications, obviously everybody's like, oh, we're just putting in a new server. Mm-hmm. David, how many things can go wrong when you're putting in a new server?
A bunch. I mean, you're taking something that, like the old server, we'll assume it's properly configured and set up. So you're taking something that's properly configured and set up, and you've already made sure everything's running the way it's supposed to, and you're throwing that out and putting a new one in. So now guess what? You've got to start all over, making sure all the things are set up properly again, and you have everything in place like you did before.
And the operating system's likely different. Mm-hmm. And how are you going to make sure that you know all the things you've done for the last 3 or 4 years? Because guess what? Somebody probably didn't document it.
Yeah.
This is why we want you to document it from this point forward. Start documenting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I actually have a meeting next week with a client, and they're asking, can we get rid of our server if we remove this piece of software and move it to the cloud? And so my question to them was, well, you know, without me looking, can you tell me what else you use your server for? Well, I know the answer to that. and he's like, I don't use it for anything else. And I'm like, oh no. Mm. You use it for a lot of the things. You know, you're using it for a centralized location for data storage locally within your business. You're using it for user authentication and roles. You're using it for group policy and all those things. So, you know, just getting rid of your server is not something that we can just make a decision on. We need to have a conversation about. And so, and we will next week.
So even if you're just completely getting rid of something, mm-hmm. you need to have a plan.
Oh, yeah. It changes. It changes things in your business.
So whether it's the equipment or the applications themselves, if you're going to add a new feature, let's say that you've never used SharePoint before, and you're one of the, you know, you have Office 365, Microsoft 3, whatever it's called this week,
mm-hmm.
and there's a new feature on it that you haven't used before. Well, guess what? How are you going to secure it? What's going in it? Who will have access to it? Who's going to administer it? You don't just turn it on.
Yeah. Well, moving to the cloud is obviously a big one that we still see, mm-hmm. and people don't think about a lot of things involved there. They just come up and go, well, the friend of mine, he's doing, you know, he's got the same kind of business, and he said the cloud is the way to go, and that's what we're going to do. I'm like, well, have you looked at what the risks are moving to the cloud versus what you currently have? I mean, it may not be a good decision for you. It might be a fine decision for you, but mm-hmm. you don't just say, let's just move to the cloud and don't look at those things. So that's something to consider. I had a client just the other day ask me, what does Microsoft cover under its business associate agreement? And I was like, that's a fantastic question to be asking now, not once you get it. So before they make that switch, they want to know, is this going to be covered and how we need to use it? Is it going to fall under HIPAA? And are we going to be able to cover it under the business associate agreement that Microsoft will sign? Will we be in the right plan that they'll sign a business associate agreement under? I mean, they're asking all the right questions, but they're doing so in advance of not, you know, hey, I got it. I got it. Now tell me how I can use it properly. And the answer sometimes might be, you can't. You mm-hmm. screwed up.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many cases where that happens that after the fact, and that's why when we teach people how you should be managing your selection of vendors and services, it starts with, will they be a business associate? If so, let's look at what that's going to entail.
Mm-hmm.
And then back to Microsoft will sign a BAA, Google will sign a BAA, Amazon will sign... But their BAAs only cover very specific services and areas of the cloud.
Yeah. Yeah. Not everything. For example, Google, not everything Google offers is covered under there. There's only a few things. Uh-huh. And so you have to look at that. Again, how are you planning to use it? And is that going to be covered under that business associate agreement? Uh-huh. The other thing, too, is they'll tell you, if you read the documentation, it says... that this platform can be used in a HIPAA compliant manner. It's not HIPAA compliant out of the box. So exactly. You still have to configure things properly and keep them configured properly, because you and I both know all it takes is an update to something, and something that was configured one way is all of a sudden not anymore.
Mm-hmm. All the options changed.
I can't tell you how many times I've had to uncheck something, save it, check it back, and save it again so that it would activate. It's like, it shows it's activated that way, but it's not working.
Uh-huh.
But that's part of your checklist.
So anything like that, switching out access points. If I'm switching an access point, making an assumption, all you got to do is, you know what we call that?
What do you call that?
The second to last thing that a developer says before they die. All you got to do is, and then the last thing is, we don't need no stinking backup.
Yeah.
And then after that, their career is over. They're no longer developers. But yes, it's the same thing. So anything that is a core service, it's a critical application, a critical piece of your infrastructure, phone systems, please, please make a plan and figure out, oh, well, I need you to give me the administrator login, David, because we're putting in a new phone system. I need you to poke some holes in the firewall. Wait, what?
Yeah, or better yet, I need you to give this vendor access to open up the firewall. No, not going to happen.
So you can see there's a wide variety of things. And whenever this comes up, you need to make a list of the services that are being transitioned, removed, or added. Just start there. What are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah. And if I can gripe for 1 second. As an MSP, one thing that drives me nuts is when I get a call from a client that says, I have XYZ vendor standing here needing to do something, and we need you to give them access immediately. And that's like, wait a minute. First of all, you've created this, crisis, because now we've got to act immediately. And second of all, we've not had any discussion about what this even means for your environment.
Mm-hmm. So every little thing could be a big thing.
Yeah.
That's why we do this. So any change that you make to your physical environment or your technical environment, you need to stop and think about it for a minute. So change means take things away, add things, bring in new people, add new people. Any of those, it can matter. So stop and ask the question, no matter how small. I'd rather you ask the question and me tell you all day long. Now, take my word for it if I tell you. But at any rate, those are the kinds of things that we want you to do. And once you've identified, we're going to add this, we're going to remove this, we're going to transition this, whatever, from point A to point B. Then once I know that, now make sure someone evaluates what could go wrong in those areas and what do we need to do to make sure things go right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're starting with. Now, here are a few tips. These are our tips on what you should include. So first of all, what we just covered is not a tip. It's you should be doing it. That's a law in our world. Now, when you're doing it, here are our tips. So number one to me that I run into is account for all your devices and applications.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what you're changing, make sure you can. Oh, we're putting in this new application. Great. Oh, did anybody check to see if this old equipment that absolutely must talk to it does talk to it?
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, I was pushed into an OR while the patient's out in pre-op already sedated, and they found a device that won't talk to the network. I'm all, got all of the booties and the head stuff and all of that on and trying to make something connect that if you just told me yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
You know, nobody told me this equipment existed.
Yeah. Well, if you've got an IT vendor that's cybersecurity focused, I can almost guarantee you that whatever software or hardware you're trying to put in place is not going to function properly.
Yeah.
Because they're going to have things in place to block stuff from connecting to your network or being installed on your system or whatever.
Yeah. Thankfully, I was able to create a SneakerNet solution in time where we could remove data from one device and get it over to the network with what I had in place. And I didn't have to make it all connect. And I did not need the VHS tape for how it worked to figure it out. So that's a whole nother story. But these are the kind of things that we're talking about, accounting for all the devices that need to participate in your environment. And that gets back to having that inventory in the first place. And things like, here's an example, another example, switching AV software.
Mm-hmm.
So this one vendor did the AV software. We'll just leave it at that. It's a complicated situation. And we're talking hundreds of devices. And they're moving to a new vendor. But the old vendor didn't have, let's just say they would not provide an inventory.
Hmm.
Of what they knew they were covering. And so there was this assumption that when everybody had moved things over, it had all been taken care of and nobody checked. Nobody went back and asked any questions because there was problems. Let's just say the water was muddy in our ability to communicate with the old vendor and nobody looked. Well, guess what? A substantial number, we're not talking one or two, we're talking a substantial number of devices were not transitioned. So when the protection, the AV security software license subscription started to expire, the old vendor got notifications about it. And do you know what they did?
What did they do?
Big fat nothing. And until a scan showed we had unprotected devices out on the network, I'm like, well, where's your inventory? Well, you know, we haven't gotten around. Okay, therein lies our root problem. Goes back to knowing what devices you have and being able to match those numbers. And thankfully, some other thing gave the inventory saying, hey, we've got these devices sitting out here. I don't know. There's like 50 of them that are in this area that somebody forgot about. Okay. Well, in a huge installation, those things happen. But if I don't have that inventory so that I can do what an accountant would do, you need to be able to balance the checkbook on all of the hardware and software that's supposed to move. If you don't know it, then, you know, I need to have that list before I start to know what I can account for. I even had a case where the inventory before we started included X, and we get over here to the news place, and that one of the devices can't be found. And they're like, well, you lost it in between. Nope, we didn't lose it. We know we didn't lose it because we saw that it physically checked in at one point. It's like it was turned on for a minute. It checked in from the IP address at the new place. And then everybody argued over who lost it. And I'm like, do not leave that building until you find the device. It's in there. We know it's in there. And when they were having the conversation, all of a sudden somebody looked when they were getting really frustrated and they happened to glance in the administrator's office. There was still a table with stuff to be put away in the new office. And under the table was the device they were looking for.
There you go.
The whole time. Okay, so account for that. Also, make sure somebody double checks your results.
Yeah.
How many times do we have the, I got this. I don't need a checklist. I know how to do this. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, you get a phone call at a really important moment. Or somebody distracts you. Or something doesn't work right away. You know, new firewall installation. Huge time.
Oh, yeah. And this is also why we double check everything when somebody sends us an assessment from like an insurance company or something like that. When they say, do you have our firewall and does it do XYZ? Or is it set up for XYZ? Although we know it is, or at least it's supposed to be, we want to verify that. Mm-hmm. So we don't just answer yes. We go in and we look at it and we confirm that it is that way. And that gives us another way to double check results because, again, things can change. Things can turn off on its own or whatever. But I want to make sure that on something as critical as a firewall or a server, that when we have things set up, we also are doing periodic reviews of those things, not just wait and see what happens or the next time we're asked to do something, but schedule that to be looked at.
So that you don't assume?
Mm-hmm.
And that is a big problem that so many people have. Well, yeah, I know it was that way. And the minute things start going wrong, go find everything that you made an assumption, because that's where the problem is. Almost always. Well, I just assumed the minute you hear that, and that's so often the case. And so we had a case where, you know, the plan was so many things can go wrong with the firewall. We're going to make sure we do this. They're setting up a new firewall, go through the configuration requirements with the vendor multiple rounds before a final version is signed off on and approved. Yeah, but then the tech that actually set it up didn't use that version.
Right? Oh,
and no one went behind the tech to do a double check on a major brand new install.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a brand new install. Someone should be double checking.
Yep.
And if nothing else, scan a major transition from an ISP or your external facing. Do an external vulnerability scan when any of that changes. Make that part of your plan. Because the plan seemed to be good right up to the point that nobody double checked the vendors. You know, because the vendor's in control of the firewall. I can't get in and check myself. And the vendor never gets around to checking and will not give you the they're in line. Stop until I get this confirmation, or I'm going to do this scan, and then I'm you can't count on the, do not assume the vendor did it right.
Yep.
So this is another good one on the licensing. I'm sure you've had this happen. I've had this happen.
Oh, I got a great story from last week on this.
All right, then hit it up.
So. Apparently, the good folks over at Intuit/QuickBooks, I'm guessing they've been sending out some upgrade emails, or maybe when you open QuickBooks, it now pops up and says it, because we've had like three different occasions in the past couple of weeks where clients have called and said, I can't open my QuickBooks file. And then come to find out, one of the other users updated QuickBooks. And if you know anything about QuickBooks, when you update QuickBooks, the first person that opens it on that new version, it converts the entire data set to the new version, and previous versions won't open it anymore. Uh-huh. And so we've had three different times that's happened where somebody in the organization decided to upgrade it, unbeknownst to everybody else, opened up the data set, and now guess what? Now everybody has to upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one that we got, the person called freaking out, like, it's payroll. I can't get payroll to happen. And it needs to be done within the next 2 hours. And I can't get into QuickBooks. And that's the problem. The problem was that they didn't look at the application and the licensing that they were using and the fact that an update to one would affect the updates for everybody.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's part of. Everybody needs to understand an upgrade requires a plan.
Yeah. A worst problem I see sometimes from smaller companies is that they'll buy like the home version license of something. So, oh, it allows for up to 5 users in this home version. And so I'll use it in my business. Well, number one, you're violating your terms of service. But number two, when somebody does come in and says, oh, you can't use it that way, or you're trying to do something that that version doesn't allow, now you're in a position where you've got to buy 5 of your proper license. So instead of spending $10 a month, now you're spending $100 a month.
Uh-huh. Well, and that's the other thing is I've seen this happen where you go in, you set everything up, the server, you've got the applications loaded, people are testing them. You've done all of that. It was on your list. You've made sure everything's fine. And then you go live. Mm-hmm. And the licenses will not allow all of your people to connect.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and mm-hmm. I've seen that happen. So you're so far down the path, it's not like you can back out and solve it. You have got to immediately move forward with, okay, well, I got to stroke a check. Now, I may have had other ways to deal with it had I dealt with it up front. I could have budgeted for it had I put it in the plan to evaluate my licenses and what is covered.
Yeah. We had an interesting one a while back where an MSP was putting a new server in. For whatever reason, they installed the trial version of the operating system, which gives you 180 days of usage. Not unusual for somebody to do that, but typically it's because they're going to buy the licensing and update it. Well, mm-hmm. within that 180-day window, that person was gone, let's just say, and we were brought in. And no, there was no documentation, there was no communication about this or anything until one day nobody could log in. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because the licensing expired. The 180-day trial license expired. And, you know, we had to buy a license for them. And they swore they already paid for, but, you know.
not anything I can do anything about. Nope, give me the deets. That's all I got. So, you know, clearly knowing what you have, knowing how many you need, and what has to communicate with each other, that is a very, very important element.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have somebody and my list of services they provide is, you know, they do my vulnerability scans, they do my patch management, they do this. When I sign up somebody else, I better make sure all of those things are back in place and have it checked and double checked. Not this assumption that, oh yeah, it's there. Let me see it work. Let me see a report. Let me see a summary. Let me see something so that I can put that with my documentation mm-hmm. to show at this point, we know where we are. Put the stake in the ground.
Yep.
So here's another one that gets back to, it's not just MSPs and those kind of things. Where this happened, it was a new billing service taken over. And everybody's like, oh, okay, yeah, they're going to handle, you know, the claims and the payments and the patient statements and all this kind of stuff. Great. They move from one to the other. There's all this paperwork that has to happen. It's an insane list of things that have to happen whenever you do this. And switching clearinghouses, same kind of thing happens. Long list. And to just assume that someone's taking care of it and the vendor's taking care of it, who's going to suffer if they don't, or a human makes a mistake. Mm-hmm. So you're saying, I will count on a human not making a mistake, no need to double check them. I'm sorry, there's just too many things. You don't know. They could be having a bad day. They could be in a fight with their significant other, or their children could be in trouble, or you could just have a really bad cold. You know, there's so many things. So what had happened was the payers that this doctor's office usually got paid by, all but one of them was handled appropriately, but no one noticed because no one checked on the back end and got confirmation. No one noticed that one of a fairly significant amount of money, paperwork was filed, but there was never confirmation of it. So they do the transition, and all of a sudden, the old billing company is getting the payments from the claims that are being filed by the new billing company. So the money's going over here with the company that you're mad at, who has no concern whatsoever about moving the money, because again, they've got to account for it too. It's easier for them to just send it back to the payer and let the payer deal with it. So you're creating a whole lot of problems because you didn't check and get that confirmation on the other side about every single piece. And yeah, there could be human mistakes, but if you do zero confirmation, you know, there's a point where you say, I don't know what else we could do. But if you do zero confirmation, then it's like, well, there's a bazillion things we could have done. And that's a major problem. So imagine the amount of stress and the cash flow issues and the negotiations and, you know, a long list of problems that went into play. So what I'm saying is, get your configurations and your setup from your service providers now while you're on good terms.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a big problem, particularly with any IT application support, is having admin control.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know for us, a lot of times when we're transitioning, we'll have a client say something like, well, the IT company should have all that documentation that you're looking for. And then we go to the IT company and we find out they don't have any of it, or they don't have very much of it at all. And the client's upset about it. But to your point, ask for that now. Don't assume they have it. There's no reason they shouldn't be giving you pushback about giving the documentation. I'm not saying that they have to give you admin access, but there's no reason they can't give you documentation about what you have and how it's configured and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes we call it a run book, but there's no reason why they shouldn't give you that. And it may take some time to pull together depending on the solution that they have in place for documentation, but they shouldn't give you any pushback about giving that information.
Well, if you're in healthcare under HIPAA, you should have that information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big problem when anybody says, well, IT keeps up with that for us. Okay, so you just put all of your legal responsibility for proving your compliance and having it available should something go wrong on somebody else.
Yeah. You outsource it to them and they don't even know it.
Is that in their contract? What about how long they're supposed to maintain it? How quickly are they supposed to get it to you? Is it in their contract they can't keep your admin and block you out? You know, there's a lot of layers. And in healthcare, the good news is, if a vendor tries to keep you from access to the records, they are violating their BAA because of the availability part of a business associate agreement. So there's a lot of things that can be done, but these are just a few of the things that we're talking about. Specific configuration requirements. If somebody's had to set things up a specific way for you to communicate a specific thing, and that happens when you're connecting in with lab systems and all this other stuff. Well, you have to have this open in your firewall, and it has to be pointed to this one IP. Mm-hmm. I have a segmentation thing that happens over here that only allows X, Y, and Z. You need that documentation now. You should have it today. So gather that information and make sure you keep it up to date on a regular basis.
Yep, because your provider may go out of business, they could pass away. I mean, especially whenever you got the I got a guy person. You know, I've seen this locally. Person passed away and, you know, every person that they had as a client has no idea about anything. Mm-hmm. Nothing. So, they don't have admin passwords. I mean, they don't have anything. Yeah.
When you're working with a small company and your business relies on them functioning, you should ask them, what is your plan if you as the owner can't function? What is your plan if the systems that you use go down and now you can't tell me how to get to my stuff? Mm-mm.
Yep.
So there you have it. You need the documentation up front. You need your inventories, and you need to make a list of the services that are moving or being added or removed.
Yep.
And then from there, you should be able to build your plan.
And ask your IT provider or MSP to help you with some of this, because giving you lists of applications and things like that should be fairly easy for them to do for you.
Yeah, assuming it's all devices that they are actually managing, unlike some yep. medical devices and you're, you know, don't assume IT has everything because I guarantee you they don't.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. All right, folks, that's our show for today. Thanks for listening. Remember to follow us and share us out on your favorite social media site. And remember, for Donna and myself, that HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.